come up on tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
Today we have a wonderful guest, David Campos, who will be talking about his award-winning now collection, Furious Dusk.
It's a collection of poems, and it just won the Andres Montoya Poetry Prize. He's the latest winner of that prize, and also the only Fresno writer to win the Andres Montoya Poetry Prize, which is, I'm sure Andres would be very happy to say, finally, Fresno won!
Right, that's right. That's right. He brought it home.
You know, although you can argue, though, that Lorianne Guerrero is a Fresno writer because she actually has roots in Pinedale.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, and Pinedale is the barrio where I'm from. And it's a little tiny barrio in Fresno. Yeah,
I know where that's at.
Yeah, and it's part of the city of Fresno
that
now.
That place has history, that Pinedale area. It does a lot
and,
of history.
And a lot of the shootings that happened there back in the 70s were family.
Your family? They were related to you. Okay,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, the Chacons had really bad reputation there. But anyway, it's so exciting that David won this prize. He is a fantastic, fantastic poet. And I remember the first time I met him, I was on Paquetalas, which is a radio show hosted by Mike Medrano, the poet, who has also been on this show. It was when my book, On Any Rooms, came out, and David Campos was there. And he was just this humble kid.
Yes.
I don't mean to sound diminutive, but he was cute.
He
just had this real gentle spirit about him.
But he would get onto a stage. I mean, you know, that's David Campos is one of those. I mean, this to me, this book and this award is something that's really near and dear to my heart. David Campos was one of those young writers who would go to this open mic there called the Inner Ear in Fresno.
I remember that.
And, you know, he would just get up on stage and open his mouth and make everybody laugh and make everybody cry. And then he emerged out of nowhere and then he just skyrocketed.
Yeah,
next thing you know, he's studying at, you know, UC Riverside. And next thing you know, he's published, and now he's winning an award. It's like, where did that? I mean, I would say this all happened in the last 7 years for him, or something.
Yeah,
it hasn't been long.
And you know what? I think this book is going to do well. It's a beautiful book.
It is,
and he's really, frankly, a beautiful man. And I'm glad we're having him on the show.
Yeah,
and also, you know, we gotta keep promoting the Fresno writers.
That's right.
You know, we promote good writing no matter where they're from.
That's right.
You're a good friend of Mike Medrano. So you've been on that show, I'm sure, several times, the Paquetalas. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could stream it. I think you might be able to stream, but I don't think I don't think you can go in and look at old archived shows. But
I don't think so, no.
You know, I've been on it, you've been on it. A lot of times people think, well, what does Paquetalas mean? What is Paquetalas? Because why would you call a radio show Paquetalas? Yeah. Ours is called Words on the Wire, which makes a lot of sense. But Michael Medrano, your show makes no sense.
Paquetalas.
But a long time ago, I edited a special issue of In the Grove dedicated to Andres Montoya. And the poem that I included, the posthumous poem that I included in there, was called Paquetalas.
That's right.
And it was a really long poem. And Paquetalas is the rhythm of working in
the packing houses
where they're saying, pack that fruit. Paquetalas, Paquetalas, which is kind of a hybrid, Spanish and the best the gringos can do when they're talking to the Mexicans. Paquetalas, Paquetalas.
It almost has this onomatopoeia quality to it, right? I mean, that's the sound that you would...
Yeah, and it keeps repeating itself in the poem.
Right.
And it's a beautiful poem.
Right.
It'll appear in his posthumous book, which is coming out in the fall of 2016.
Oh, wow. Nice.
But Michael Medrano, who contributed to that issue, liked the sound of it so much that when they offered him a radio show, he says, I'm going to call it Paquetalas.
Right.
Which is just another example of the influence Andres Montoya has had on the kind of literary world.
With one book.
Yeah, with one book. Can you imagine if he had written several? Jeez, right now he would be the Philip Levine of Chicanolandia.
Wow.
Well, he kind of is anyway.
Yeah, that's right. He is.
So stick around. We're going to talk to David Campos, about his new book,
Furious Dusk.
Oh, man, it's a good book. It makes me ache, but a beautiful ache. We'll be right back.
Furious Dusk is the debut collection by poet and now award-winning author David Campos, who just received the 2014 Andres Montoya Poetry Prize. In 5 deftly crafted sections, Campos' poems offer the reader an unflinching view of his own reality. Of his collection, author Chris Abani writes, Campos writes with an original voice and fire about race, identity, and nation. An extraordinary book of grace, and I cannot recommend it enough. Campos received his MFA in creative writing from the UC Riverside program, and he's currently an English professor at Fresno City College in California. David Campos, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man.
What number Andres Montoya Poetry Prize is this, and what does it feel like to be part of that, which really becoming an incredibly rich tradition in American poetry?
I think it's number 7.
Right.
Lucky
right.
number 7.
Lucky number 7. Yep.
I think it's number 7. And I first heard of this prize when I had an intro to poetry class here at Fresno City College. I was introduced to the work of Andres Montoya. He was the first poetry collection I ever read.
Wow. Oh, wow. And who taught the class?
Oh, that was Lee Herrick.
That's what I thought.
Lee Herrick
That's what
taught
I thought.
The class.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I was in Lee Herrick's class, and he opened my world up to poetry and the possibility that what poetry could bring to me. So I started Googling who Andres Montoya was, and by that time, he had already passed.
Right.
So it was... I found that there was a prize named after him. And as soon as I found that out, I started putting together some kind of manuscript out of all these poems that I had just barely started generating. Of course, they were horrible poems.
that's how it starts.
But, you know, you progressed really fast, though, you know, and, you know, that wasn't too long ago, as I remember. But, you know, you progressed, I mean, just at an incredible speed, David. You know, I'm curious to know, what was your immediate reaction like as soon as you found out that you received the award, that it was you? Was it by phone call, or what was it, a letter, email?
It was a phone call. Right. I had, up to that point, I was actually considering just quitting the manuscript and just letting it go and having it just done and over with and moving on from it, because I had been getting so many rejections or very close calls. So when that call came in, it was strange because I needed it at that moment, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah.
I needed that kind of sense of validation that you're doing something right. Mm-hmm. So that flipped my world upside down.
Right.
It was an amazing phone call. And we had a small conversation about the original title. So that was something that...
Which
that
was?
What was the original title?
Pika.
Pika. Oh, Furious Dusk Pika. Is much better. I'm glad you listened. You know what's really cool about this, David Campos winning the Andres Montoya Poetry Prize, and everybody around this table right now, which is me and Tim, we knew Andres.
All two of us.
You know, he was a very good friend. And but what's significant about your winning the prize is not only are you the first, I think the only Fresno poet to win the Andres Montoya Poetry Prize. And, of course, Andres was as Fresno as Philip Levine, right. Even more so because right. Andres didn't have his Detroit. He had his Fresno. And you're the first Fresno poet to win this prize. But you're also one of the poets. I've read all the books. We've had all, you know, most of, I think, all but one on the show. You seem to be more influenced by the actual aesthetic and poetics of Andres Montoya than anybody else who has won this prize. Mm-hmm. Is that a true statement? Or is that an accurate statement that he has influenced you?
Yes, severely so. Because I was, even during the rewriting of the manuscript during grad school, I would always return to his book. Mm-hmm. And there were a few poems that I would constantly come back to and reread to try to figure out moves, to try to figure out what it was about Fresno that he tried to capture, and he captured so well in that book. And I wanted to continue that conversation in one way or another. So his book was always on my desk. Mm-hmm. It still is, you know.
And, you know, we here at Words on a Wire are big fans of synchronicity and alignments. We've talked about this before. But, yeah, synchronicity. But, you know, one of the things is that we know also you have been a co-host for quite some time of a literary radio program there in Central California called Pacatelas. And wasn't that also named after, wasn't that taken from an Andres Montoya poem as well?
Yeah,
it was.
And we actually did a reading of that poem, the full 20 minutes of it, you know. I think I read part 1 of or part 2 of that poem. And it was reading that poem that kind of gave us that idea. We were shooting around different ideas for the name of the show.
You and Michael Medrano. You're talking about Michael Medrano, the poet.
Yeah,
yes?
Michael Medrano. Yeah, Michael Medrano and I were both shooting back ideas back and forth about what to name the show. And, you know, the Inda Grove special edition Pacatelas issue had just come out, and it was still fresh in our memories. And we thought, what better way to honor his memory than to name the show after Pacatelas? You know, it just the title just had such urgency, such demand.
Right, which is the sound of people working in a fruit packing plant.
Oh, Pacatelas, is that what it's named
after? Pacatelas. Pack those things, pack those things. Nice. And it's also also a poem that's going to appear in the posthumous book of Andres Montoya, which is going to come out in the fall of 2016. So
that on a sort of very local level, you get to bring it home. You know, you get to bring the award, the prize home back to Andres Montoya, sort of homeland or hometown anyway. But on a sort of on a national level, right, how does it feel to be, you know, now, I mean, some really amazing poets have won this award, started their sort of literary careers from the award, Cheryl Luna, Paul Martinez Pompa, Lorian Guerrero, people like that. And I'm wondering, you know, for you, what does it feel like now to be sort of among that list of writers and poets?
Exciting, overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, opportunities have finally opened where they haven't been before. It's a surprise at every turn. Like, I don't know what's happening next. And I was kind of warned happily, I guess you would like to say, that it's going to be a roller coaster of a year, and so far it has been. And I'm really looking forward to AWP. It'll be my first time going out there.
Oh, really?
That's going to be a lot of fun, yeah. The first time I can actually afford to go out there.
Right. And for those who aren't familiar with that, that's the Association of Writers and Writing Program Conference that happens every year.
And this year it'll be in Minnesota, and you're going to freeze your little poet's ears off.
Nice.
You are now among the Fresno poets, which really is an amazing group to be among. Obviously, one of the patriarchs would be Philip Levine, who, you know, we just recently lost. I mean, the list goes on. There are probably more poets, a disproportionate amount of poets coming out of Fresno than anywhere else, and had an incredible influence on them. And I remember there was a conversation between Levine and another Fresno poet. I won't say who the other poet was, but the other poet was saying that poetry should be true. It should be, you know, it should stick to the truth, and as opposed to allowing the imagination to take over a poem. And Philip Levine thought that was a bunch of crap. You know, he really defended
that is a bunch of crap.
Okay, well, that was going to be my question for you. I, as I read these poems, like Wage Claim, is this poem about coming back to try to defend the wages that have been ripped off from a giant corporation to the worker. But as I'm reading these poems, I'm thinking, you know, some of these just sound like they're so true, which really says a lot about the writing. But how much of this is autobiographical, and how much of this do you allow the language and the image to take you beyond biography, autobiography?
I would say it's 100% true, and then I would say it's 100% imaginary.
I love it. Explain, please. Yeah. I love that answer.
I think it's more trying to capture the emotional truth. Mm. Or the moment, the truth of the moment in the poem. And then wherever the poem takes you, that's where the poem goes. You know, I read some of these poems to my students to try to get them out of that. You only have to write what actually happened. You know, I read them all, especially the elegy that I wrote for my father. And then I ask them, would you be surprised if I told you my father's still alive?
Right.
And dealing with all that stuff. And they were just completely shocked. And I think they felt like I had lied to them. But then I had to explain that, you know, it's, you know, during that moment in my time, I had to kill this idea, this metaphor of who I thought my father was at that point. So the only way I could get around that emotional moment was to write a eulogy for him.
Mm. Well, you know what? I am surprised that your father is still alive, too, because those were some of the most moving poems in this book. But, you know, I also think that it's what matters is the poem, not material, you know, facts, which, you know, are really not as true anyway, like you say, as the what is fundamentally true.
Right, because my sense is too across. I mean, just reading the whole book, it was, you know, you have a distinctly, it's a speaker, right? I mean, we know that as writers, we know that that's when we write, that's who's speaking. There's a speaker. It's not necessarily us, the author. But for you, it seems more obvious.
I'd say there's never a speaker. It's always the author in one way or the other.
Yeah.
I know
right.
a lot of people will say, whoa. You know, but that's just my point of view.
Right. But there is sort of a different. Well, then I guess maybe the to rephrase that, then I would say then that there is a sort of you're honing in then on one very keen aspect of the author that becomes the speaker in certain poems, like the father, for example, who gets killed off. And in reality, your own father is not dead. He's alive.
Yeah.
You know, but so then that sort of leads us to sort of understanding the poet who's speaking to us in a certain light. It reminded me a lot also of another writer, too, Luis Humberto Valadez, in his book, What I'm On. In the beginning of it, right, he starts it off by committing suicide, slicing his own throat, and then he goes on to tell you about all of his life, you know, and obviously we know he's alive and well, hopefully, in China somewhere. But I caught on to that pretty early on, and I'm also, I'm a little aware of your own background as well, and so I know that you've done some screenwriting as well, and I'm wondering then, you know, using kind of these fictionalizations or you know, these kind of approach to poetry, you know, how much did your own sort of, you know, background in writing in other genres inform that?
Well, screenwriting helped me organize the poem. Mm. You know, it was the introduction to the larger story arcs, because one of the main, like, things that we did in the screenwriting workshops was focus on creating a beat sheet, which just, like, outlined the entire movie. Mm. And it kind of blew my mind in a way, because mm-hmm. I started thinking about every poem as an individual scene and how I could build a whole movie through poems. Right. And that's the approach I came back to when I came to reorganizing the manuscript. I was just like, build it like a movie.
Wow.
You know, introduce the world and, you know, send the speaker on the adventure. Put a whole bunch of obstacles in front of them, you know, make sure there's like that dark moment of the soul right before the end, right before they send off in the last chapter, and kind of have the speaker come to some kind of realization at the end.
Right.
Wow.
That makes for a compelling read for sure.
We're talking to David Campos, Andres Montoya Poetry Prize winner, 2014 for his book, Furious Dusk. And, you know, what you're saying makes sense, because every single poem in this book, I feel like I'm entering into it, and I'm there, and I'm witnessing it, you know, like a movie playing in my head, only a movie with much more tangible detail than just visual. Let me ask you something. You were accepted into the MFA program at UC Riverside, which, you know, has a great reputation for poetry, and Juan Felipe Herrera is there. What was that experience like?
That experience was world-changing, because I had a unique experience, because it felt like the instructors that I came in are no longer there. So I had, like, the last bit of an era, if you would like to say that in a way. I had Christopher Buckley, who retired the year I graduated.
Oh, wow.
Chris Abani, who left right as I graduated, and then Juan Felipe, I believe, is retiring this year just retired. So I had Christopher Buckley, who's heavily influenced and really good friends, I guess, with Philip Levine. So we read a lot of Levine and a lot of Larry Levis while we were there. And then Juan Felipe, which opened our I talk about R as like my classmates, but, you know, our minds up to play in poetry and stop thinking about rules completely, which, you know, you go from one style that's very focused and set in a traditional style, and then you go into Juan Felipe's class, who says, no, let's play. You know, forget about rules.
But yeah. So, yeah, he taught you just play with the language, play with the line breaks, play with whatever.
Yeah, play with whatever. And then I had Chris Abani, who really opened up, who really told me the poems that I was working with were not really good. And, you know, it's hard to find someone who is willing to be completely honest with you
Sure.
and work with you as you destroy your own manuscript and then rebuild it from a new perspective. Mm-hmm. Because I think my issue was back then was witnessing, you know, it was just like, oh, all these poems just witness. Witnessing isn't enough. And it was trying to make that turn. You know, opened my eyes to make that turn, and that was significant for me.
What you're saying is really resonating with me as a reader, because some of the poems would be like almost as if, the influence was the Philip Levine tradition, you know, with regular the line breaks mm-hmm. and the story unfolding and it being nice. About working class and it being about mm-hmm. Fresno. And then other poems, you just kind of bust out local with the way you put it on the page. And I'm thinking like particularly the poem called The Call, where the line breaks are just crazy. I mean, they're crazy, but they make a lot of sense. And then there's another poem that I think is one of my favorites, and it's the one about standing in front of the mirror, and you have mm-hmm. two stanzas side by side that play off each other, and it almost seems
the poem.
Yeah, and it's also I think one of your most beautiful vulnerable poems,
right?
But it just seems like you're not locked into one particular tradition. It seems like what guides you, and this is what I'd like you to comment on, you know, what guides you poem to poem is the poem itself.
Exactly. I mean, it's what the poem needs. And whatever the poem needs, sometimes you start out one way and you're like, okay, this one's going to be very structured. It's going to have a very nice fit for it. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you're just like, nope. I had to bring a hammer down to it and completely fracture it, because that's what's happening to the speaker inside the poem. So it needs to show that kind of fracture, that kind of play, that kind of breaking apart. In the poem, like The Call, it used to be very tight and concise lines.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was thinking about, well, the speaker, his world is just coming apart right now.
Mm.
How can I represent that on the page?
Right.
How can I present that visually on top of through the lines and the words themselves?
There is, obviously, I mean, you know, the language in all of the poems throughout the book, very visceral, you know, a lot of fantastic images, but there's a deep, sort of very strong sense of vulnerability. We know that the author, the poet, you, David Campos, you know, put everything on the line and sort of bare your soul in a lot of these poems. And, you know, as someone who's also written, drawn from his own life experience as well, and written about family and friends and what have you, I'm curious to know then how your family has responded, and also how your, you know, including your wife, how your wife has responded, because you have quite a few poems about relationship in there as well.
Yeah, it's terrifying. You know, it's absolutely terrifying. So, you know, when I hear, you know, advice from like writers to be fearless, I think this is what it really means to be fearless. It's to really be completely vulnerable and just put it all out there. But then again, you know, it's trying to explain to them, yeah, like, yeah, I felt maybe a moment of that might have been truth for me. Or, for example, in a few poems, which one was it? It's Need, right? I was sitting in a Starbucks and I was eavesdropping to this woman who was describing to her friend about a breakup, and that kind of inspired that poem and brought some of those things together home. So, I mean, there are certainly some like conflicts, some things I needed to explain.
Right.
But it's difficult knowing that, you know, people are going to view you in a certain way and say, yeah, oh, your marriage is falling apart now. I have a healthy marriage, you know, very
right.
strong and healthy marriage.
Right.
Oh, your father is dead? No, he's completely alive. You know, we have one of the best relationships now.
Right. Well, we're talking with David Campos, whose collection Furious Dusk is the winner of the 2014 Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize. David, before we let you go, I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing one of your poems from your collection with us.
You have a request.
Well, I like the one about that I mentioned earlier, Wage Claim.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see definitely the cinematic quality of this one.
The cover has a cinematic.
The way you described some of the poems you outlined based on as if it were a screenplay.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay. A wage claim conference in Fresno. Driving from Riverside, I hit 90 miles per hour before I downshift. Gears whining, down the steep grade like an F-16 Falcon. The car slows a little, and I hear the tires holding themselves together for all they're worth against the asphalt. The long tail of car lights blazes the road as I descend into the San Joaquin. And a sense of urgency spills through the spreading night and onto my eyes like the fumes of gasoline. I pull off the 99 and onto a deserted road where farmland stretches for miles in either direction. I park next to a peach orchard and close my eyes for a few moments before I hit the road again and begin to imagine tomorrow's conference. A cramped room, my previous employers in their JCPenney business suits looking irritated and foul, claiming they don't owe me one red cent, though they skimmed hours and overtime off my time cards for years. They have a lawyer. I could afford only the full tank of gas to get here. I'm nervous, afraid. My heart pounds inside its cage next to a peach orchard where the croaking of frogs serenades the nearby canal as I fling the fallen peaches covered in grime through the leaves into the darkness. I hear the slapping sounds of branches and the thud of them crash landing on the fertile ground. Every car will one day know the inside of a junkyard, the guts of wires spilling out like these branches. Should I turn back? How hard would it be to forgive what was stolen? The car's emergency lights blink as I continue to throw the peaches harder and faster into the trees. I will not be a coward. In the glint of moonlight, I get into the car and continue the drive, the peaches left out to bleed and rot under the trees.
That was David Campos reading his poem Wage Claim from his new book, Furious Dusk. David, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you, David.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
And we'd like to thank our guest, David Campos, for sharing his poetry and his words. And check out the book. It is fantastic.
Furious Dusk, which just won the 2014 Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize.
The first Fresnan to do
right.
So. And we'd like to thank our producer, Norma Martinez. None of this would be possible without her.
Of course.
I don't know why she puts up with us, quite frankly.
I don't want to ask. I don't dare ask.
Let's just take it as a gift.
This wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire.
Join us every Sunday at noon. And don't forget, the next book you read
could be your own.
Ooh.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tight rope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see. And the wire seems to be the only place for me. A comedy of errors.